my coworker from Como News in Seattle, Eric Johnson, brought her to my attention a few weeks back. Eric did an amazing piece, which is linked in the podcast, Eric's Heroes. Marcia may be found in solitude, which most of us during the pandemic would say, no way, we would like to be with our friends. From her journal sketching to her indigenous reconstruction of forensics reconstruction, it is my pleasure. You can find her on Instagram at Marcia K. Moore. Her website is Marcia K. Moore. Help me out here. I want to make sure I get it right.
CMR Studio.
CMRstudio.com. It is my pleasure to welcome you to the show.
Oh, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, the visuals, go take a look after you're listening to the show. Some of the stuff that I saw you draw, like, let's talk about this. I'm so intrigued on how did you get started, like, just drawing these, you know, the indigenous people or even the creature, the hairy creatures as well. Can we call them Bigfoot or Sasquatch? Are they those?
I think you can call them whatever you want.
Okay.
I think just because I like to let everyone have their own perception, so to speak, you know, have their own perspective on this, as I have my own perspective, because this is my journey with this. But if I were to say, yes, I go out into the forest and yes, I sit and observe kind of the unseen in the forest, I would have to say, yes, why don't we associate it with the forest people or Sasquatch.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Some say that the indigenous animal creature, Sasquatch, may be of a different dimension. I'm kind of old schoolist. I like them to be an indigenous creature of the planet. That's just for me. Although because there haven't been any, well, there is an article from back in from Mount St. Helens days where when they were bringing in creatures or, you know, game, that Bigfoot may have been part of some of the extinct wildlife that was out there during the eruption. That's still to be determined. Obviously, those files are sealed somewhere else. But it's amazing. I saw the piece of some of the stuff that you've done with drawing out there. Now, do you get a hunkering where you're like, you just, it clicks with you and you're just off to the woods, or how does it work?
Well, initially I started carrying a sketchbook when I would travel, and I would go maybe research projects, and I would travel to different places, and I would take my sketchbook with me and just write down little notes and write down, just journal my day. And then that would include raw moments, raw sketches, things that just would kind of unfold through me as my day unfolded. And 3 years ago, I moved to the Pacific Northwest. So I've only been here 3 years. And I decided at that point that I wanted to, journal sketching seemed to be really, became really important to me. It became a moment in my life. It was like, I could just, it was so easy to just unfold these sketches with Bic pen or Pilot pen, something, an easy medium, in a sketch journal, go out into the forest, write down, information that just flowed through. So it became an everyday experience. So I do that every day. Maybe I don't go out into the woods every day, but I journal every day and I sketch every day. And that's, for an artist, is kind of keeping the tools warmed up, keeping your hand warmed up, keeping your creativity warmed up. But at the same time, the magic that unfolds when you're not using your brain so much and you're just letting your hand do the work. I always look at the end of the sketch, or even when the sketchbook is finished, I'll look back and go, this is who did this, you know, and who wrote this, because it's information that are just moments in your life that unfold every day. So that's how that got started. So I go out with, and I have a sketchbook here and I'll show it to you.
That's awesome. You know, as you were saying, it's like keeping your pencil sharp when as you were saying, but some of the pieces that you're, you know, if you have a chance to, you're listening on the radio, be sure to go back to northwestphenomena.com and watch watch the footage. We'll have the podcast and the video up so you can check out some of the sketches as well.
Exactly. I found these phenomenal sketchbooks that are leather bound and they're like 17 by 13 inches. So they're huge and they come with handmade paper.
Oh, wow.
And they're amazing. So I take this everywhere I go. My first one, it took 2 years to finish. And that's the one that you will see with the video that's presented with Eric.
Yeah.
And I just finished my second one, actually. So I'll be on to my third one in 2021. And the plan is to, I have a partner right now that's going to be helping me. And the plan is to create, publish a book that will have all these sketches because so many people are interested in these raw moments and these sketches and just the journaling aspect of it too. So hopefully there's a hopeful book in the future here as well. So
it's like looking at some of these pieces and now what's, when you're done with one for like, let's say for an example, yesterday's piece, when you did, or whenever the last time you sketched was, and you look back at it, what are like some feelings or some emotions that go through your mind after you're done with the piece that, if it's an Indigenous person or whatever you sketched, where is your mind at with that?
Well, with the sketchbook specifically, you know, I'm an artist that does many different things. I have many different disciplines and I use many different tools. And the sketchbook, like I said, is a traditional tool. It's a hand tool. It's something that I can pick up and just sketch and go out into the woods and be with myself and go within with myself and hang out there in the forest. And I don't look back, to be honest with you. I just keep moving forward and I keep adding. It's like, it's almost like a healing for yourself, honestly, as you're sketching and as you're journaling, as you're taking the trail with each day of each sketch. It's very much like Joseph Campbell's, The Hero's Journey, where you're taking the journey and right. You're the one that's moving along. And to be honest with you, everything that I do, research wise, art wise, forensic reconstruction wise, sketching wise, is my own personal trail. It's my own personal journey. And in doing that, if I can show it to others that can, maybe open their mind to different possibilities and do, you know, if they can take a sentence from the journal or if they can take a visual and open their minds to maybe taking their own journey with specifically maybe lost history, because a lot of the work that I do has to do with our lost North American history, our lost even global history, a lot of anomalies that nobody wants to discuss or maybe mainstream media will not, you know, our researchers won't discuss. So I want to, or I have taken it upon myself with the skills that I have. And I've just brought back a lot of this lost history. And if people can learn from it, that's great.
You know, it's interesting you say that because as I was explaining to my daughter one time, I said, you know, history is written by the victor. So a lot of history, a lot of the Native American culture from the Northwest or across the United States, it's not just the Northwest. I mean, you know, the Indigenous, you know, the First Nations lived across the, you know, the country. And for them, as we've done interviews in the past, some of that history is really lost, but especially in the Northwest, there's such a rich, vast history that have, you know, that I've, you know, been able to, that has been presented to the show in different pieces. And it's just interesting to hear what people are giving back and to hear the history and the culture. And as you said, you know, it's being suppressed or the mainstream media doesn't talk about it, but I mean, it's here. It's right down the street. I mean, you could go anywhere and you're like, wow, the cultures are, you know, in Seattle, the Duwamish tribe, you know, the Muckleshoot. I mean, there's tribes everywhere. And it's such a great, rich history if people can learn about it. So something that I was just thinking about it, you know, as we were talking about that, can you describe to the listeners who may, you know, be interested in like what maybe a piece, one of your favorite pieces that that you were like, you looked at or that you could describe to our listeners that you're like, wow, this is something that came to me. I drew it. And you're like,
I'm gonna take you back a little ways.
Okay.
And I'm gonna take you back to when I was living in Florida 3 years ago. I lived in Florida for about 15 years. Never thought that would ever happen, but it did happen. And it was a wonderful thing because Florida, if I was, and this is what I do when I move places, I strip away the architecture and I strip away the people and I root myself into the land and I find the real connection of what was there before me, because it's of interest to me. It might not be of interest to anybody else, but it's of interest to me. So I did that in Florida, and the ancient history that flowed through Florida was so connected to the history of the Pacific Northwest. And as I lived in Florida, the ancient history became pre-Spanish. So this was 500 years and 1,000 years prior. It became like if your audience is familiar with Star Wars, it became like the Tantooine or the hub.
Yeah.
Tantooine in Star Wars was like that planet that was the hub where everyone would come and meet. And that's the way Florida was. And as we look at ancient history, we find that maritime sailing occurred all over the planet. People were going everywhere. People were traveling everywhere. If you talk to some of our indigenous communities here in the Pacific Northwest, they'll tell you that they made canoes that could fit 100 people. I mean, they were traveling. They were on the move.
Right.
So as I was in Florida, I started to research heavily the anomaly of our ancient skulls that have elongated craniums.
Interesting.
And I'm going to show you one of those pieces.
Okay.
Just so the audience can kind of get a visual of what this is all about. So this is an elongated reconstruction that I have created. So it's a 3D sculpture that I created on the computer, and then I had a 3D print made of the 3D model, so to speak. And so this is kind of a sculptural piece that shows or represents a facial reconstruction of an elongated head. Now this history happened 2,000 to 3,000 years ago all over the planet. There wasn't one continent that didn't have elongated skulls. And we find this specifically through our alternative researchers that are really, there's a gentleman down in Peru, Brian Forrester, who maybe you'd love to have on your program at some point, lives in Peru, from North America, moved to Hawaii, and then now is in Peru and studies our megalithic structures and our elongated skulls. So he knows way more than I do, but I've kind of followed him and through following him, I've been able to reconstruct these skulls. So the trail of these skulls, if you look here in North America, led me to the Pacific Northwest because a lot of our indigenous communities were head binders, meaning they were emulating maybe the people that were doing this. And when I say people, or there's about 4% of elongated skulls, when they're found, appear to be natural skulls, meaning they appear to have that shape naturally. And the rest of the skulls are actually created through head binding. So that means they are shaped to take on that look.
Yeah, so, I was going to say for the listeners who may, you know, it's like the same thing with back when they were in the Asian community when they would bind their feet as well, right? When they would.
Well, I mean, we could say that. The head shape was, you can really look at this, or I'm taking the journey of it as who were they emulating? So as I took the trail from Florida led me over here to the Pacific Northwest specifically. So I uprooted myself from Florida and actually made kind of that epic move from coast to coast and moved over here to be around the communities that were headbinders and to learn more about the possibilities of why they did this.
It's interesting as you're talking about the headbinding. I'm very curious to know what you've found so far in your studies, because I mean, the first thing looking at that sculpture, which is amazing, is I think of someone from a different planet, you know, like an extraterrestrial, maybe someone from not here, not from this planet. And, you know,
well, and that's where we have to keep our mind open to the possibilities. And that's where you have to take your own trail with this and do your own research, because everyone has a different answer. Everyone has a different perspective. And my own perspective is that that is a possibility, of course, probably a huge possibility. And then as I got here to the Pacific Northwest, I found out, and I'm speaking for, I want to say specifically, I'm speaking for and through me, myself. And yeah. So information that comes from our indigenous communities, that's their information. This is information I've picked up along the way through some people here in the Pacific Northwest, but I don't want to include that into, you know, a generalization, so to speak.
Right.
So my trail has led me to those that were headbinders here in the Pacific Northwest, specifically that of Vancouver Island. So we know that was there. We have remnants of that. We have photographs of that. There were many, many of the tribal members that were headbinders. And so in talking to elders or in talking to hereditary chiefs, I found out, and this is where the journal sketchbook and the elongated head thing kind of overlaps a little bit for me. It's not going to do this for everyone because not everyone's going to believe this, but this is my journey with this. Our indigenous communities up here, when you take a look at the, like you said, the richness of this, the depth and the knowledge that goes along with every aspect of this, their communities and the culture. And when you, notice through their potlatches or their ceremonies that a lot of what they are representing through family crests or through the masks that they create or the story poles that they create, you'll see a lot of the wild man or the wild woman representation. And that representation is that of the forest people or Sasquatch. I'm going to say Sasquatch. They have their own words, and I'm not going to, I mean, there's so many different words out there that I'll just say Sasquatch in for a generalization.
Right.
But they will tell you that their reshaping of the head was in emulation of the forest people.
Ah.
So they were emulating the forest people. And that's my own personal trail with this, you know. Everyone that does research, you know, has a different story, but there's a real overlap here in the Pacific Northwest. And this is the territory. I mean, you come to Washington and Oregon, you come to the Northwest to, you know, the Bigfoot phenomenon is huge out here. So everything is big out here. Everything is giant sized out here. The trees are giant sized. The energy is giant sized out here. So there's a lot in these forests, and they don't have to, it doesn't have to be just in the forest,
right.
But as you go into the forest and you kind of get closer to being rooted onto the planet, then you get closer to maybe anomalies that maybe do reside in different densities or do reside in different dimensions that we're just a veil away or maybe just a heartbeat away. And maybe we're the ones that have to open our hearts and expand our vibration and expand our energy in order to see them. So that's my own personal journey. That's what I have to say about it. And, it has a lot to do with the sketches.
Yeah, no, it's great that you're able to share that with us. And I, out of respect for, you know, the First Nations and all of the local community of the indigenous Native Americans from around here, or even the Native Canadians. excuse me, I had a gentleman on by the name of Tom Seawood. I'm not sure if you know who he is.
Yeah, I do know Tom.
Yeah, great guy. Just... so such a great, you know, to have him come on and to share his stories is so rich and vast, because it's from the community. It's from, you know, from this area, to have someone come in to talk about, you know, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Juniqua, I think is what he called it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So he, you know, I'm like, now I'm thinking about this. I'm like, I gotta have him back on.
You should have him. You should have us on together. Can you do that?
Oh yeah, kind of yeah. Oh yeah, we could definitely.
Yeah.
I mean,
you should have. There's a couple of people I could introduce you to that would be. It would be fun to have as a group, because this is again how one perceives the subject matter.
For
everyone,
sure.
There's not one person on this planet that does not have a different perception. Period, the end.
Right.
I'm going to look at this differently than you're going to look at it. And at some point, maybe we can both get on the same page with it energetically, but we're always going to just, you know, and that's when we can learn from one another. We can learn from one another's experiences. And that's when having a group and having people talk about things in a positive way can be very helpful. As far as these were my experiences, and I'd like to share these experiences with you and take on the experiences of other people too. And that's the way you learn. And that's the way that you share. And that's, imagine if our whole planet, if we did that, humanity did that, period, the end, if we were able to share our cultures, share our stories, everything, this would be a whole different planet.
And I think, you know, so, especially right now with the, you know, everyone says with the pandemic going on, I think even with myself, this summer I spent more time in the woods than I ever have since I was little, and obviously my daughter being 12, she's like, "Dad, do you really believe in Bigfoot?" I'm like, "Anything's possible, honey," you know, but the minute you go out, like, for example, go out to Mount Rainier National Forest, you go out there and that's old growth. Nothing's been touched in there. Obviously the roads are in there, but the trees haven't been cut, maybe manicured, but everything in there is from hundreds of years. You know, this old growth forest is out there. And to me, you lose your phone reception and you just have a moment. You're listening to the creak of the river, of the Carbon River float by, you know, just that sound. And as you said earlier, anything's possible. As you said, you open up to just relax and just take in nature.
Yeah, I think this pandemic specifically, it shouldn't have had to have worked out this way, but it has allowed people to really find what's important again and find themselves again. And at the foundation of that is usually our connection to this planet. And so you have seen a lot more people, I think, out in the woods and out in the forests and out in these beautiful rainforests and really relearning themselves. And that's very important. About a year ago, I went out with my sketch journal and I sat in the forest and I sketched. And I was probably about, I don't know, maybe 50 feet away from the trail. I was sitting on one of these big one of these big trees that had fallen. I was just sitting there sketching, and probably 20 people, 20 hikers walked past me, and only one person saw me. Only one person saw me.
Wow.
So imagine if only one person saw me, a human, in this forest.
Right.
Imagine what goes unseen in this forest. Because most people, when they walk, they're walking and talking, or they're focused on other things, and they're not really observing what's around them. And that was a really interesting observation for me.
For sure. We're going to take a quick break. You can find her on Instagram at Marcia K on Instagram. We'll be right back. It is Northwest Phenomenon. Welcome back to Northwest Phenomena as we are hanging out with Marcia K. Moore. You can find her on Instagram at Marcia K. Moore. Her website is, let's see if I don't butcher it this time, Marcia K. Moore.
CMR Studio.
Oh,
CMR is just my name, Pig Latin. It's just, you know, I've CMR, taken Marcia and just went shaboom.
Okay.
And so I had CMR Studio for a long time, so I've kind of kept that with me.
.com. Thank you for joining us on the show. It is so interesting to have you come on to talk about when Eric, we worked together at Como TV. He's like, Eric said, "Hey, Mario, I got somebody for you." I was like, "Really?" He's like, obviously for TV, the story was more about the drawings and the pieces about you being in the woods. Sirens. That's what happens in the city. As soon as I saw the drawings, I was like, yes, I want to talk to her. And it was more about like the pieces that you were doing, you going into the woods, taking time to just, what I got off of that interpretation was you disconnecting from normal day-to-day life. just.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
disconnecting with maybe the life that we have as a structured life, as a conditioned structured life, and entering the zone of being reconnected with the life as a human on this planet, and taking my skills and my tools, meaning my sketchbook and my pen and myself, and going out in the woods and allowing myself the time to be in the moment, like a meditation, be in the moment and just journal words that come out, unfold through my hand. I mean, as an artist, I can say that because we always say as artists, you know, we have the license to say whatever we want.
Right.
So, and you know, a creative brain is a right brain. So, you know, there's that whole creative process is happening, but allowing yourself to just let things unfold as the energy unfolds around you in the forest that you're in. Can you do that? It's not easy. Most people go to the forest, like we just said, and they will talk throughout the entire time. They'll talk about their day job, or they'll talk about, oh, I need to go to the store, or, you know, talk about family or whatever. And that's fine. But can you actually take the time to find yourself? We're being given this time, actually, with this pandemic. We're being given this time with ourselves to rediscover ourselves. And I've been doing this for a long time because it's always been a part of my world as an artist. But I think if everyone with this last year could take a moment, and maybe lots of people have, I'm sure there have been lots of people that are just taking moments to rediscover themselves and rediscover what they really like. A lot of people like to go out in the forest and they're rediscovering there's the camping aspect of it, or the bushcraft aspect of it, or the, you know, the survival aspect of it. They're reconnecting with who they are on this planet. And I think that's very important. So the sketchbook allows me to go out there with my skills and my tools and just not think. Thinking ruins creativity. When you overthink something, if I pre-planned everything that went into that sketchbook, you would not be seeing anything like what it is as it's presented now. It would be so overbaked, overdone, overworked, and it wouldn't have the loose movement and the creativity of the characters that are flowing through. Where are those characters coming from? Well, I don't know. It's not like I've pre-planned these. Maybe I've looked at a tree, or I've looked at, you know, a lot of these forests, our rainforests, there's so much character that unfolds through the forest that maybe influences my moment. And then that comes through my hand and that character is created. And maybe that character actually does exist there. Maybe that character is actually just a heartbeat away. Like I said, maybe that character is just a veil away or a density away. We really have to get in touch and in tune with us as humans being energy and having vibration of energy, and how that relates and reflects with everything that we do and everything that is created on this planet. You're creating your own reality ultimately. So this is what I'm creating.
It's interesting because you say that, and out of the people that walked by you, only one saw you. So let's go back to that. I mean, if you had a bunch of hikers that go up, and they're just tunnel vision, as we would call it, you know, talking about day-to-day life and not taking a minute to hit the pause button. I mean, maybe they are missing creatures in the forest, you know, indigenous wildlife. Maybe Sasquatch is there watching, and he's just a heartbeat away, or just a glimpse away. And he's right in front of your eyes and you don't even see him. I mean, that's in your case, that was, you know, basically what happened.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have personal stories with the Sasquatch, in that it goes deeper than just going out into the forest and journaling and sketching. I mean, I've actually had a lot of questions answered through something that's out there, because they've shown me. Right. And, you know, that's, what can I say? I mean, how is it so hard to believe we create every day, and we create realities every day. And, you know, you look at the entertainment business, they create new characters, they create new imagery every day. We're creating every day. Imagine what we're missing. Imagine what we're missing.
It's interesting because I'm like, just listening and going back through, even, you know, as I'm sitting here, going back through my time in the forest this summer, how much did I miss? You know, how much do any of us miss when we're out there just going out for our hike, or going to, you know, to maybe the Snoqualmie River to float the river, and you're floating the river and you know, you're kind of looking around, or you're in Leavenworth and you're floating that river up there. How much stuff are you missing? Are you missing a character? Maybe as a child, how many times would you look at the clouds and you would see different shapes and forms? Oh, there's a turtle in that one, or there's a fish in that one, or whatever. And then I think as we continue to get older, that part of our brain shuts down. It's there, but we just don't use it as much. And for you, you're gifted because you have the ability to, as what I'm getting from this is that you're exercising that creativity, learning, like you're using those tools and not letting that, you're continuing to exercise those muscles.
Well, absolutely. And I'm trying to be as authentic as I can to who I am, as far as who I am as Marcia, and also who I am as an artist, and trying to really not push my life, because I already played that game. I already did that. I already, you know, I did the conditioned life. And then one day I said, that's enough. And I need to really take care of myself, because if you can't take care of yourself, you really can't take care of anybody. So I decided to really work on myself. And in doing that, I started to create, it was just nonstop creating. And in doing that has helped. I mean, a lot of the reconstructions have helped researchers globally. I mean, no one had put a face on the elongated skulls. No one. No one had touched this anomaly. One of the first ones that had put a face on these elongated skulls. I have, if people go to my website, you will see all kinds of different projects that I've worked on. And I'm also really open to helping other people's perspectives or other people's theories on things too. So I will put a face to their own projects too. So you'll find a lot of that on my website, a lot of visuals.
So I want to ask you about the elongated head and how you were able to, you know, take something that probably should have been done a long time ago and put a face with it. But I'm very interested to ask, when they would do the binding, would that really change the structure of the hair from growing? Or in your research, have you found out any information in regards to hair growth change, no hair because of the binding of the skull being elongated? Was that something that the hair growth hindered that, or was?
No, actually the head binding doesn't hinder any of the hair growth, and it doesn't really change any of the hair growth. And in fact, I have a 6 foot canvas back here of one of my computer reconstructions that I put on canvas.
Yes,
and beautiful. This woman has an elongated head. This is the actual piece actually right here.
Okay.
And you see the head, it looks extremely elongated, but when you put hair on her, you can't even hardly see the change.
Right.
So a lot of this went unseen. It's just that a lot of people had elongated heads, so it didn't really change the hairline at all. So.
And during some of the, would they do the binding as when they were more young, as children, as child,
yeah.
children?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, very young, the head binding. Up here in the Pacific Northwest, they used a lot of cedar wrapping. In maybe more of the plateau of Washington, it was more of the headboard wrapping. So there were different styles, and those different styles are seen all over the world. And some of it's still seen today. You'll see some of it in parts of Africa still.
In your research, are you able to share with the listeners and people who may be watching on the YouTube or whatever, are you able to share any of the knowledge that you've learned from the head binding with the listener in regards to, was it more of, do they share that it was more of, what they saw was they did this because of the indigenous creatures that they saw in the forest, or is it more of the indigenous of maybe seeing something from, not from this planet?
Okay, well, let's start with the, since I'm here in the Pacific Northwest, since we're both here, let's start with the association with our forest people, our Sasquatch people, our Bigfoot people. Most people that have experiences with Sasquatch, they will talk about the head that has a sagittal crown. It'll have a kind of a cone head look to it. So when you're talking about the Sasquatch and you're talking about density, you're talking about dimension. Well, if the Sasquatch is residing in a different density, and if you're a human wanting to emulate that, wouldn't you want to try to expand yourself into that density as well?
I would assume so.
And so you would emulate a shape maybe to help you do that. And that's exactly what was happening. So you're expanding, just like the elongated heads, you're expanding your consciousness. You're expanding your consciousness and you are allowing that connection, that veil that we talk about, that becomes much more clear and you're much more connected to those other densities or that other dimension. And if those force people are in the fifth dimension, let's just say they're in the fifth dimension, then you're wanting to connect with that density. So you're emulating that head shape to do that.
I mean, to have this conversation, because this is way above my my skill set or knowledge. I mean, I always joke around, like I'm so fascinated by this, and like, to me, I feel like every time I have a guest on, I feel like I'm learning something every time. So selfishly, I'm thankful for you to spend some time with us to talk about these things. But because everyone talks about Sasquatch and Bigfoot and, you know, the Patterson film and everything's so like, I want to say top 40, but so mainstream, right?
Right, exactly.
And again, this kind of is more in depth, having this conversation with you, and maybe we need to revisit this with, you know, with yourself and have a couple others on, you know, to talk about this maybe a little more and have another conversation, because I don't think this has been done on any, well, at least not here on my platform, where it's been all the surface level stuff. It's not the, you know, we'll talk about the Patterson film, or you'll talk about maybe, you know, you'll see some. It's just interesting to kind of have this full body. I feel like this is more in depth on what really was going on in those times. Like, everything was so sugar-coated. Like, we just talk about, like, the rainbows and things of that nature. And I'm not trying to belittle any of this, but it's so the rich culture that is being lost. And thank you for sharing your stories and, you know, being an artist, to be able to reconstruct, you know, these pieces on history that has been lost in this area or across the country from coast to coast, you know, from your journeys from Florida up to the Northwest. I mean, it's so, so rich in history. So thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, you're welcome. Absolutely. I mean, I want to share this with people. It's not an easy share though. I mean, it's, you know, this is again my own journey with this. And so I'm sharing information that has, you know, the door has opened for me on this level. For a lot of people that might even watch this might go, what the heck is she even talking about? But at some point, everyone is going to perceive a little taste of this. It takes a little time, but you will. And in hearing somebody like myself or others that discuss this, if you hear just one word or a sentence that could make sense or even can apply to your own knowing, then your expansion is, you know, your consciousness is expanded as well. And that's why we're here. Is that not why we're here, to expand our consciousness? I mean, we're here to do that. We're here to know why are we, I mean, those were the questions. Why are we here? What, you know, where are we going?
Right.
All of that. So those questions are starting to present themselves. Those answers are, excuse me, are presenting themselves. And we can't, you know, I can sit here and go, you know, I might be not even trust my own knowing of this. I could go, you know, this is just ridiculous, Marcia. But it's not. It's an internal knowing. It is an intuition, and it's an internal knowing, which leads to an expansion of consciousness, which in reconstructing these long heads has shown me, because I've had hands on with these skulls, and it's like this information is just being given to me, and they're just, and that connection is coming back home. It's like they're wanting us to connect the dots.
Right. If someone wanted to find you other than Instagram, they would go to where? I mean, to see some of the other pieces that you've done, or to maybe watch videos of you. Where would they go to find you at?
Facebook. I'm always posting things on Facebook. I'll post my forest walks. I'll post, you know, the new sketches every day on Facebook. I'll post any reconstructions I've done on Facebook. That's usually a good one to go to. Instagram, you mentioned that. My website, I'm always keeping that going and up to date. I do have a YouTube page as well that I'm just now kind of getting started. And the intent there is to go out into the forest and sit amongst these anomalies, you know, in the forest. And I'm sure Tom probably talked of some of this. There are structures and different things that are created out in the forest that we look at and we're like, who did that? I mean, what is that about?
Right.
I'm going to put myself in those environments, and I'm going to sketch and see what unfolds, and just have like a, you know, just kind of have one of those bushcraft days where I'm out there making coffee and sketching and hanging out in the forest. So people can find me on YouTube as well. That'll be kind of a fun thing.
Where do you like to go? Can we ask you that? Where are some of your favorite places to go?
Well, I'm up here in Bellingham. Yeah. So there's some phenomenal just forest, just, I mean, practically at my back door, you right, know, it's like, right. You've got, you know, Mount Baker and all of that area. Yeah. And then you've got just, you know, even as you're kind of heading out of town, there's all kinds of rainforest in this area. So I just go yeah. out, and there's, you know, you don't have to go very far to really get a sense of the magic that's out in these forests. That's for sure.
I was talking with another coworker of mine. We'll just leave him nameless right now, but he would go between Mount Rainier and Adams, and between the two mountains there. And he went to go fishing, and he was fishing, and he felt a presence of something else out there. And this was back in the like 80s or whatever. He got his fishing pole, got in his truck, and he left.
Yeah.
He felt something. He didn't say anything with anybody else. Another friend of his went out to the same area, felt the same thing, and he was fishing as well. And he actually spent time trying to look around to see what he might have found. But I attribute that area, because I have not been in that area. The roads to get to that mountain are a little more treacherous. So I call that hole between Helens, Adam, and Mount Rainier, those volcanoes seem to have rich forest that is just not touched, you know, like right now, you know, Chinook Pass closed.
Yeah.
You know, so much going on out there.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting.
I think that you can go out there and go really far out there and get that feeling and that sense, but you don't have to go far at all.
Yeah.
You can go right. Like, you know, I'll go 6 miles away just to the nearest hiking area and get the sense immediately. And we all had that sense. And I'm sure even growing up, when you, if you spent any time outside or in the woods, didn't you have that sense where you're like, what is that? Yeah. I just have that feeling of a presence or feeling of something following you, or that always happened to me when I was young. And that is happening more than ever, I think, right now. So when you go out into the woods, and if you can get into, you know, I'm one that is of the benevolent, you know, right. I'm a real positive thinker and a positive, everything around me is of positive nature. So I'm not bringing any negativity into this. And a lot of people can or will or do or have different experiences, but that's not my experience. And I think it's best to go in there into the forest and go in with a positive attitude and a reconnection for yourself, number one, and then just open up your heart and see what happens. Because opening up the heart space is when those energies start really unfolding. And that's when you get that sense of there's something here. There is something here.
It's interesting when you say that. You're right. There is. I mean, there's everything in those woods. I mean, you're going to find little creatures. You're going to find, and if you open up your mind and you look a little bit wider, you might see something else out there.
Absolutely.
It's been a pleasure to have you come on. We'd love to have you come back on. Maybe have you and Tom and somebody else come on the show to talk about, and maybe go in depth a little bit further and talk about the indigenous people from back in those days and have an open, you know, conversation. It's amazing that, you know, during this, if you have a chance, you know, I know it's winter, but if you have a chance to go out and do what you're doing and just stop for a hot second and just listen, how much peace and calm you'll get from that.
Absolutely.
The day-to-day of, you know, the numbers and everything being so, and you know, just in your face, and your phone, you know, getting an automatic update like this is how many people died in Washington or whatever. It's just take the moment, enjoy it. And now, if someone was like so interested in your work, do you sell it, or is it more for just for historical pieces where, you know, maybe you use it for, maybe you sell your pieces for charity work, or do people buy your artwork?
Well, a lot of the work that I like with the reconstructions, that's more of a research side of me. So that is work that I'm doing, and then also maybe collaborating with other researchers. So it's projects that we do together. With the sketches, like I said, there will be a published sketchbook. I'm not really sure when that's going to happen, but it will happen probably within the next year here. Most of those books, I really want to keep them intact because they just read so much better as a journal,
right,
and not so much as just separate sketched art. But I did have an exhibit a year ago, and I have 18, I think I've got 12 sketches left that are framed. And those are for sale. So you can reach me through my website and ask about those. So I'm giving out a little taste of that. Yeah.
Yeah. You can find her on Instagram at Marcia K. Moore, and your website, Marcia K. Moore. Is it MAR Studio?
CMR Studio.
Oh, CMR. Okay. CMR Studio.
Maybe I shouldn't have done that. I combined my name and my studio because I lost my original domain name, just my name. And so I went, gosh, dang it. So I had to combine both my name and my studio together. So it is a little long, but you can find me at Marcia K. Moore, cmrstudio.com.
And it will be linked in the video and podcast. So we'll have it all available there. So my apologies for butchering it every single time.
No, I applaud you for trying several times.
So thank you so much for coming on the show. Honestly, just thank you for sharing your stories, because at the end of the day, I think people don't get to hear the vast, great people from the Northwest or even anywhere across the country or the world on what they're doing. And this is such a great thing that you're doing. So thank you very much for coming on and just sharing your stories and your experiences with us.
You're most welcome. I'm happy to do that. And you know what? To be honest with you, we have just scratched the surface in our talk today. So you'll have to have me on again where we can maybe share visuals and really get in more in depth with the stories and the experiences that have happened out in the woods, and maybe collaborate with a couple more people and share their experiences too.
I think that
you could bring
awesome.
Tom on and he could share his more indigenous knowledge of all this.
And we could
really share some cool stuff.
Well, I appreciate it. And we definitely need to do that. And we'll do this maybe in a couple of weeks. We'll touch base. We'll start working on that on this end. And for all those who are interested in hanging out or, you know, subscribe, go listen, go check out the stuff on northwestphenomenon.com. It will be available Just go subscribe, listen. It's all there on the website. So we thank you for your time again. Marcia, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate what you're doing. Great work.
Thank you. From the Pacific Northwest, I'd like to thank you for listening tonight. If you would like more information on our guest, Marcia K. Moore, links will be available in the podcast or at northwestphenomenon.com. Thank you to our affiliates, KOSW, KGRG, and KAPY. Thanks to Karis Astrology for my entire team, Jay Middleton, Jeff Jens, and Sophia Magana, and myself, Mario Magana. Remember to look up at the sky, because you never know what you might see. Good night.
You're listening to Northwest Phenomenon with Mario Magana.